Hey, everybody. We've been traveling across the country. Ever fly from Burlington to Phoenix? It doesn't happen quickly. And so because of that, we had to take a day off of podcasting. We did do an interview with Daniel Horowitz that you should listen to as our sister episode. But I thought, hey, why don't we air our conversation at University of Vermont, where we have an amazing discussion, some disagreements, some socialists that come up to the line. It's a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. Our speech at University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont. And look, it would be very easy if we just kind of took it. We just kind of sat around and we let things happen and we didn't really push forward. We are offensive minded here. I want to thank those of you that make that happen. At charliekirk.com/support, you can become a partner. You can become an integral part of growing with us. Jameson from Costa Mesa, thank you. Linda from Rancho Santa Margarita, thank you for supporting us. Sarah from Sparta, Tennessee, thank you. Alfred from Santa Rosa, thank you. Jameson, again, from Costa Mesa, amazing, thank you. Michelle from Hutchinson, Kansas, thank you. Thomas from Las Vegas, Nevada. Joel from Hope Mills, North Carolina. Julie from Kansas, thank you. And Whitney from Utah, thank you. Shelly from New York. And Janie from Colorado Springs. When you support us at charliekirk.com/support, you get behind the work we are doing to grow, to flourish, to add more people to our team. We do two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. And if we have blessed your life at all, please consider supporting us of any amount at all, charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Flash alert, everybody. Stop what you are doing. Speakers have been announced for Turning Point USA America Fest. It's a big deal. So who do we have actually coming to America Fest? It's unbelievable, actually, the amount of speakers we have, not to mention the country music artists that are coming. tpusa.com/AMFEST, tpusa.com/AMFEST. Let me just tell you a couple of the speakers that we have coming. It's incredible. We have Tucker Carlson. We have Kayleigh McEnany. We have Ted Cruz. We have Jesse Waters, Candace Owens, Jim Jordan, Donald Trump Jr., Madison Cawthorn, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Jack Posobiec, Sean Foyt, Michael Chandler, Sarah Palin, Benny Johnson, Jimmy John Leotold, that's right, Jimmy John from Jimmy John's, Steve Weatherford, and Cameron Haynes, and so much more. tpusa.com/AmFest. Also, start a high school chapter, start a college chapter today. Email us your questions directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. I love hearing from you. I read every single email that we get, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our program, you could do so at charliekirk.com/support. Again, please consider doing it. My speech in Vermont. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I wasn't sure what to expect in Bernie Sanders' hometown, but this is pretty great. Yeah, we're thrilled to be here tonight, and we're going to have some fun. And I know we have plenty of people that disagree that are here as well, and so we're looking forward to that portion of the evening. But I want to first start with the most important thanks, which is our Turning Point USA students that have worked so hard to put on this event. Give them a round of applause. It's incredible. It really is. And it's very difficult to be a conservative in today's America. It's more difficult than ever to be a young student who is a conservative, especially at the University of Vermont. And so you deserve great credit, everyone here in the yellow shirts and all of our chapters. It really is terrific. And so there's a couple things I want to talk about.
kind of, I first wanted to say, why am I here? Why am I in Burlington, Vermont, of all places? And I actually love Vermont. I know that's a contrarian view for a conservative. I'm going to tell you about three things I like about Vermont, and then I could tell you the things I don't like about Vermont as well. But I grew up coming here. I grew up visiting Lake Champlain. I grew up in Chicago, so it's not too far. And this is honestly one of the most beautiful states in the country. It's God, one of God's gifts to America. I really believe that. And your politics is a totally different story. We could talk about that as well. And I think there's something special about Vermont that we shouldn't forget that we as conservatives should focus on, which is the idea of preserving the small against the big, which is that sometimes it's important that we as conservatives recognize we want to have local communities stay strong, families stay strong, and that we, of course, want limited government, but we also don't want overreaching corporations either destroying, you know, kind of timeless family businesses that have been passed down. And so I kind of always like coming to Burlington. Yeah, I don't know if Burlington likes me coming, but apparently it's, you know, but it's, thank you, where it's actually really interesting and important where this is one of the few cities that has still kind of kept, at least from an aesthetic standpoint, the idea of small town America and not wanting kind of these soulless, godless corporations to come in and destroy small business and entrepreneurship. And there's some very interesting contradictions that I think that Vermont is living through right now that we'll talk about. Because Vermont has always kind of been this idea that we want to keep the way, we want to keep things the way they are, which is actually a conservative idea. And, you know, some people on the more socialistic left would disagree. They would say that, well, no, we want to, you know, we want to abolish private property or stop, you know, business. You know, see, they're already cheering for the abolition of private property. We have a nice start already. So you won't mind if I take your poorly worded sign. Yeah, I could tell. So they must be consistent then. But there is this idea, though, that we as conservatives in the last 18 months, thankfully, have stopped being corporate cheerleaders. I think that's a really healthy thing, that we as conservatives should stand for the good, the true, the beautiful, for the local and the decentralized, not the foreign and the distant and the corrupt. And that goes for saying that we don't want to be ruled by Washington, D.C., and we also don't want to be ruled by Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, or AstraZeneca, that... That we believe in the power of local communities, states' rights, obviously. And so Vermont has the ability to govern themselves as they want in a balance of a federal system. Thankfully, I get to go home to Arizona. No offense, but I do enjoy a little bit more of a conservative state. But there's a couple things about Vermont. I'm going to say three things I like and then the things I think that Vermont needs to improve upon, which is, I mentioned, the number one, I actually kind of like the idea of town meetings. I know that not every conservative does. But I do kind of like the idea that the local is still prioritized here in Vermont. The thing shut down and you care about what's happening around you. And at least it's been described to me that still happens a lot in Vermont, if I'm not mistaken. And that kind of idea of participatory government is a uniquely American idea, that you're not going to outsource all your decisions to some politician or bureaucrat or oligarch that you don't even know the face of, that saying, you know what, we're going to take a day off work to even show up and be able to, you know, have our voice be heard in the local town center or town meeting. That is one of the constitutional ideas of consent to the governed that I hope we don't lose in our country. And Vermont, you know, for all of its other kind of complexities, I think is something that's very admirable. The second thing, and I want to just reinforce this, and I'm still trying to figure out how this kind of mixes, is I know so many people in Vermont that, and many people here, that want, that have been on a crusade against bigness, that is saying that we want to be able to say the companies we purchase products from, we want to know the people's names, their history, their background, and we don't want to say that we want to just kind of be ruled by the same 100 companies, right? That we as conservatives should stand against big government and big Google, that both of those things are equal threats to our liberty and our freedom. But the question is, what do we want to be strong? And this is where we'll disagree completely with, you know, some people on the left. We believe it's a moral and objective good to have big families and to have people get married and to stay married and to make the family the center point of American society. And The third thing that I love about Vermont is your gun laws. I have to say, you guys have great gun laws. You really do. We got Pastor Todd here from Ignite Church. Now, here's some things that Vermont can improve upon, right? Vermont is the third least churched state in the country, and not by, it's right there on the edge. Some people are very supportive of that, right? And that goes to show that the more secular a state comes, the less free it is. And when you do not have people regularly attend church, when you remove a belief in a transcendent order, then you're going to have to replace that with something. And sometimes that something is something that is collectivist in nature and unfortunately sometimes authoritarian and tyrannical in nature. And so you could look at a direct correlation of as people start to say, you know, I want to reject religion or a belief in God, they're going to have to then pursue something in their life, whether it be materialism or statism, to try and fill that type of void. And I will reinforce this, that what liberty can only be handled by people that are moral and virtuous. John Adams said it best at the founding of our country, where he said that, John Adams said that a constitutional republic was made wholly and only for a moral and virtuous people. It is wholly inadequate for the people of any other. So what does that mean, moral and virtuous? Well, if you do not believe in a God, then morality is simply a form of opinion. You only know that a line is crooked if you have a straight line to compare it to. And if you get down into the metaphysics of it, eventually, and there's been plenty of people that have tried, Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and many others that have made a pretty good attempt at it, that absent an idea of a creator making creation, absent an idea of a transcendent type morality, which, by the way, is baked into a lot of our Western traditions, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, don't take people's stuff, then you are going to all of a sudden enter a cycle where the strongest person wins the argument, where it's the person that is in charge, it's the person that is controlling the particular power apparatus, not the person that actually has a public and agreed upon type of moral system to judge itself on. And so Vermont, I think, is at an interesting place. Actually, the state's far more conservative than actually people put it on. You take Burlington out of the equation, the state is actually conservative. And I'm not saying you should take it out of the equation, but I'm sure a lot of you say, New York, you could take it. You can annex Burlington. It wouldn't make much of a difference. But it is this kind of this situation where I think that, and this kind of goes back to the question, why am I here? Well, I'm here precisely to show the world that even in the place that you're not supposed to go as a conservative, Bernie Sanders' hometown, Burlington, what are you doing there? No, we as conservatives need to go to all places. Like, we need to go to places that we've never been before, including the most liberal cities in America, and bring our message of optimism and one of human empowerment and one of constitutional liberty and, you know, small R Republican style government to every single corner of the country. I'm going to University of Oregon next week, which will be really interesting. But that's something I want just every conservative here tonight. Maybe not a conservative. Obviously, we got plenty of those tonight, which is don't be afraid to go places that you might not feel welcome. And that's an important thing for life, which is do not allow other people to dictate the terms of engagement for you, which is it would have been very easy for us to show up at just, you know, friendly territory. But to go places where sometimes there's a little bit of a commotion. And I also want to just reward the activists, too, at Turning Point USA, because they're the ones that put on these events. They're the ones that have to get spit on and they get, you know, mocked and ridiculed, doxed and publicized for this. You know what? We as, you know, pro-American activists and advocates, we need to stand next to our activists that are on these campuses, because the truth is an amazing thing, that when you release the truth, it has a way of defending itself. And that's one of the reasons why we're here, is to try to have the uncomfortable conversations, to try to challenge the orthodoxies. You know what? There's actually more of us than you might actually think in this area. These ideas, viewpoint and platform, deserve, no, at least some form of discussion and dialogue. And so there's a couple of the things I want to talk about before we get to questions. I want to talk about the death of liberal America, which is a very important thing. And the liberal America being different than you might think. There's a difference between liberals and leftists, right? Leftists are people that wish to shut people like myself up. Liberals would disagree with my current speech, but they'd say, okay, yeah, whatever, I might come ask a question, but I'm not going to make a big point out of trying to cancel or trying to destroy your ability to speak. And, you know, it's very interesting kind of reading some of the, you know, publications leading up to this event where it says, we must shut down fascist Charlie Kirk. I'm like, who's the fascist exactly? The one that's coming to speak, or the person that wants you not to be able to speak? Like, that's awfully authoritarian and fascist. Like, and I think it's an important point, because if our ideas were so terrible, then just let it happen and don't show up. Don't try to make it this kind of hobby or task to try to eliminate somebody you just disagree with. And I think that goes to a broader point, which is that activism mixed with moral righteousness gives people a false sense of purpose. And unfortunately, we see this a lot at very, very left-wing campuses, which there's a purpose crisis in our country, and it's a very real thing. And things that give people purpose should be responsibility, relationships, spiritual connection, not necessarily protesting some speaker that's coming in to give an hour and a half lecture and then walk outside of the room and like just leave. And that's a deeper and more profound point, which is America's becoming a place where students in particular are less happy than ever before. And we're going to talk about this in a little bit, and like what actually brings happiness and why is that important? Because I believe happiness is a choice, not a feeling. And that's something that they will not teach you at most college campuses. They say, no, it's something that you can feel if you, you know, check certain boxes on your way there. But when you see some of the activists that are demanding cancellation of viewpoints that they disagree with, there is kind of this renewal of purpose that like, I finally have something to do. And that might sound silly, but if you look at city by city, the people that show up and do these types of protests and show up with that kind of fervor, it's almost as if the idea of I am doing the right thing to try to eliminate the person that I fundamentally disagree with. Let me just say, there's something a lot more fulfilling out there than being a protester. That you can start a family, a business, travel, go for a hike. That the most important thing in your life should be the things that last forever. You should prioritize the eternal over the temporal. And this is something that I think we need to be more honest about, which is, you know, as we look at students and we look at the younger generation, a lot of people say, Charlie, why does it seem as if, you know, they are so adamant at trying to shut up other people? It's not everybody, by the way. There's a lot of students here that are not, you know, trying to shut people up, and you guys deserve credit for that. But it's a growing cohort, and it's kind of going with momentum. And just by some background, by the way, we only publicized the event, the date, the address of this event very recently, because the first hotel we had came under a very targeted campaign from certain people that didn't want us to be here in Burlington. Right. And I thought to myself, like, don't you have anything better to do? Like, no, you don't actually. Is that the whole purpose is trying to contact Hilton to try to not let them go down because he's a fascist, but we're not a fascist. And I actually want to just extend like an olive branch. And it's like, please go explore the world and explore the scriptures and explore a relationship with God and Jesus Christ, because there's something so much more beautiful out there than just trying to cancel other people. It's actually not a great way to live. So let me talk about why we name the tour what it is, Exposing Critical Racism Tour. And it's really interesting. This is, you know, people always joke around. They say, Charlie, you want America to be all white, which is nonsense. It's a joke. I say, wait a second. The whitest state in the country is Vermont, and their politics are pretty screwed up. So I don't believe any of that, okay? It's the whitest state in the country, and they got plenty of, you know, issues with that. And I don't think we should judge people based on skin color. I think it's anti-American. I think it's evil. I think it's immoral. I think it's wrong to judge people based on the color of their skin. And critical race theory, wokeism, diversity industrial complex, diversity, equity, inclusion, wokistan, whatever you want to call it, has and is plaguing our major institutions, which comes from critical theory. We can go into that if you guys want to. And it's this basic idea that the systems of America itself are racist, unjust, inequitable, whatever kind of words you want to use, and that it's our position as white allies to try and blow up the system as we know it, try to topple it, try to invert it, to try and get towards some form of Marxist utopianism. I don't really know what comes next, but everyone kind of has their own kind of specific answer to that. And I think it's a total disservice to the country that we live in, which we live in the least racist country ever to exist in the history of the world. That the country that we live in is a place that has accepted more people from more parts of the planet and has done so successfully. And CRT, critical race theory, diversity industrial complex, all these sorts of things seek to destroy that. Where the country I grew up in like 10 years ago, I know it kind of sounds funny to say that, was people that would have espoused this viewpoint, we would have called them racist, and rightfully so. We would have said, show me your actions, your character. Show me what you actually want to bring to the world. Don't try to judge people or try to characterize them or organize them based on things they cannot control or cannot change. And it's this simple. Do you think that things, the most important way to kind of characterize people is based on things they can change or things they cannot change? And saying that, well, you know, we need to try and atone for our white privilege, you know, and I always get a chuckle out of that when I hear it out of Bernie Sanders. I'm like, so which of your three homes are you going to donate to, you know, the disadvantaged populations of the state, right? Which is like, spare me, you know, the white privilege type talk. And it kind of goes to this question of, if you believe skin color and the preference of that is important, then you wish to completely change the mission statement of America. And America has a trinity, just like there's a Christian trinity. And the trinity is, in God we trust, liberty, and e pluribus unum. In God we trust, pretty obvious, liberty, the pursuit of virtue. E pluribus unum is a Latin phrase. It means out of many one. That means regardless of your skin color, your background, no matter what you look like, we are all one because we're all made equally as human beings. We're all human beings, regardless of your skin color, regardless of your background. And you just look at the numbers, they don't pan out. And the numbers that they say, well, there's disproportionate outcomes based on race in this country. But if you factor whether or not there's two parents in the home, you factor level of education, it's not the skin color that means anything. Instead, it's things that matter much more than that. Whether or not our children being raised in stable homes. And so if you take a white child that is raised by a single mother and a black child that is raised by a mother and a father, a traditional nuclear family that is harshly under attack right now in America, the black child raised by the mother and father is far more likely to succeed in any sort of independent metric that you want to choose, high school graduation, college graduation, getting a job, not going to prison, than the white child that is raised by just a single mother. And that's according to the Brookings Institution, which is a liberal think tank that is not exactly, you know, on my individual political viewpoint. So the focus that we should have instead is, how are we going to rebuild the family? How are we going to make people actually take responsibility for their most important interpersonal relations and say that this is a moral and objective good for society? But that runs at odds with something that is a core tenet of American leftism, which is a core tenet of American leftism is that pleasure should matter a lot more than responsibility. And so we as conservatives believe a lot of things. One of the things that we believe in is delayed gratification. We believe that the best things, the most important things, the higher things, the eternal things, the ultimate purpose comes when you restrain your own natural impulses, you apply yourself to a code of conduct, you control your own self, and you do things that are hard but are worthwhile, like getting married, like having children, like... And this kind of goes to this question, which is that we believe that leisure and luxury are a byproduct of hard work, dedication, and deferred gratification, which, and you see this kind of playing out right now in American society where, you know, there's a workers' crisis right now where people can't find people to do work because we paid people not to work for the last year and a half. One of the worst mistakes we've ever made in our country. And I'll get into the lockdowns and stuff if you guys are interested. But even beyond that, it's this question of, you know, is there something meaningful and worthwhile about maybe being mildly uncomfortable in the immediate term to try to then have some sort of reward in the long term? And when you ask yourself that question, there is kind of this assault of trying to destroy the Western prescribed nuclear family. You saw this at a Black Lives Matter website during Floydapalooza last summer when, you know, BLM Incorporated put on their website, they said that we exist to try to disrupt and destroy the Western prescribed nuclear family. Every single metric you can find is that people are less likely to go to prison, more likely to have higher incomes, less likely to fall into poverty if you keep the actual family structure together. This is regardless of skin color, regardless of background. And so what is one of the reasons why the family structure is falling apart? One of the reasons is that we have made it more convenient and acceptable and easier than ever for young people to remain childless, for young people not to get married. And instead, some people in college campuses are told and propagandized that it's a patriarchal system that is exploiting, you know, women, and it's this terrible and awful thing. And in fact, it's the opposite. I got married in May. I can tell you it's one of the most beautiful things that a human being can do.
I've been telling you guys about Relief Factor for quite some time. And truth is, I know millions of people are, in fact, 100 million people are in some kind of pain. Look, producer Andrew, he couldn't walk. He was a hobbled individual. He was bedridden in his chair, complaining all the time. And then all of a sudden, we got this call from Relief Factor. They said, hey, we want to partner with your show. We're going to send you some Relief Factor. Producer Andrew got it. He took it, got a little bit better, took some more, got a little bit better. Next thing you know, he's doing the Fallsberry flop like you wouldn't believe. In fact, he might be training for an Ironman. It's pretty incredible. Now, he says it's thanks to Relief Factor. I ask him all the time, Relief Factor? He says, relieffactor.com, 100% drug-free supplement. You can get it for less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day. So go to relieffactor.com, and I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start to see if we can get you out of pain. And then after that, it's less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com. That is relieffactor.com. I'm telling you, a lot of people are in pain. It's 100% drug-free. Don't go to opioids. Don't go to these other things. Check it out at relieffactor.com.
And understand that every single totalitarian and tyrannical style of government exists to try to destroy relationships first between the husband and the wife, and eventually between parents and children. Whether it be Mao's Chinese Revolution, whether it be Joseph Stalin and Vladimir Lenin in the USSR, because the ultimate social institution, the one that works the best, is that if you have a family that is supporting itself, especially an intergenerational family, where you have grandparents supporting grandkids, and you kind of have this three-tied knot of the past, the current, and the future, and this is a beautiful kind of example that Edmund Burke used, then all of a sudden you're less likely to go on government benefits. You're less likely to seek social welfare. And that, for one of the reasons, as the American family has fallen apart, just give you an idea of how profound this is. 77% of black children in America will grow up without knowing their father. 77% of black children in America. So if you want to have like a conversation of systemic outcomes and inequities, I think the most important thing is, why are we subsidizing single motherhood in our country? Why is it through the Great Society program that we're subsidizing fatherlessness and this kind of failure of taking fathers outside of the home? And there's a lot of different answers for this. And the easiest answer is that our politicians and our, you know, cultural leaders don't actually want to tell people the truth, which is that you're not, you know, I guess you're allowed to, but it shouldn't be culturally acceptable. It shouldn't be something that's glorified or taken, you know, platform if you impregnate a woman and abandon her. Like, no, you're a coward. And that makes society a less happy, enjoyable, safe, and quite honestly, free place to live. That taking responsibility for one's actions is something that keeps America free. Instead, we have now entered into an instant gratification cycle that does the exact opposite, which is you can feel wonderful, feel great in that instant modus and take zero responsibility for your actions. Guess what? It creates really miserable people, because in our soul, there is a yearning for responsibility. In our soul, there is a yearning. And you know this, even left-wing students, you know, kind of know this, which is you work really hard on a test and you do well on that. There's actually the kind of this sense of fulfillment. And there should be, because you applied yourself, because you worked hard, because you actually had a goal and you sought out and did it. And when you have an entire generation that is quite a kind of directionless, that is all about instant and momentary kind of dopamine rushes at that current instant, at that current moment, then you start to see all of a sudden the unraveling of some of the ties that bind us together. And so one of the reasons we focus so hard on exposing critical race theory is that regardless of your political viewpoint or your philosophical viewpoint, we can all agree that these kind of deconstructionist ideologies, things that try to tear at the very core of who we are as a country, our history, our shared ethos, is something that's going to make America soon very unrecognizable. And I'm afraid that we're getting there. In Georgia, they are putting white children in one classroom and black children in another classroom. They are segregating children based on race. 75 colleges across the country have graduation ceremonies based on race. 75, including Columbia University. Western Washington University has black-only dormitories. That is evil. And we, as pro-American, whatever your, you know, description is, we should all agree that black-only dormitories, putting black kids in one classroom, white kids in another classroom in the city of Georgia, and also having black-only graduation ceremonies that only harbors the very sin of segregation that we worked so hard to eliminate in the 1960s, and we need to stand against it. So now I want to talk a little bit about life. We could talk about all sorts of stuff. We could talk about how men aren't women and women aren't men. We could talk about all sorts of stuff. And both are beautiful, by the way, made in the image of God. We could talk about that and how they both need each other. I'm sure that will get animate some people in this room. But I just want to talk a little bit about life, which is I think that one of the things that students don't hear enough on college campuses is how do you live a happy and fulfilling life? Now, obviously, I'm a Christian. I believe in the inerrancy of Scripture, the triune God, and Jesus Christ as our redeeming Lord and Savior. And God bless Pastor Todd for your missionary-type work here in Vermont. It's truly amazing. But I just want to get to a very simple thing that I think that differentiates kind of two different political viewpoints, which is embedded in conservatism is an appreciation and gratitude that we live in the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. There is a gratitude that there were people that existed before us that sacrificed a lot, so we have the ability to be able to espouse awful garbage ideas and welcome them in to our events. And that we have the ability to have a free discourse and we are able to have dialogue. That's a unique thing. To live in a free society is hard. It takes generations of sacrifice of people delaying their own gratification so you can live in a wonderful country. And so, you know, I said this once on a podcast. People said, well, thankful to whom? Well, first of all, thankful to our creator. Thankful for the person who gives us our existence. And then let's just even, if you don't even believe in that, because Vermont is the least churched country Vermont is the least churched, and you could tell. I will say this, that if you show up to church, you'll be much more happy. I will say that. You'll be a much happier person, I should say. We'll get to you guys in a second, I promise. Should be thankful for life. It's a gift. It's a beautiful thing. It's a true appreciation of the deeper and eternal things starts with wonder. When I was landing here today, I saw incredible natural beauty. I saw, you know, mountains that looked like they were literally on fire. You guys hear that all the time. And it makes you wonder, wow, is that by mistake? Is that an act of randomness? Is there something behind that? It makes you wonder what else out there is beautiful and worth preserving. What else out there is eternal and elevated? What else out there is something that we should try to go above and beyond and make sure it doesn't get corrupted, and make sure that it doesn't get destroyed? And that starts with gratitude. It starts with being thankful. And the first thing is being thankful for life, thankful for consciousness, thankful for existence, thankful for things that are deeply, objectively good. And we as conservatives, then, I kind of just say this in general, that we want to design a society that gives preference on your choices and your actions and your behavior, not on your complaints or your grievances or the mobilization thereof. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm perfectly, you know, kind of on board with breaking up certain companies and using political power to try and make that easier. But generally, I think that it's very important for people to try and prioritize that the greatest battle you'll experience in life is not Charlie Kirk versus climate change or Charlie Kirk versus the oil companies. No, it's Charlie Kirk versus Charlie Kirk. That it is the struggle within that we must tell young people, that we must understand that it's self-control, that the improvement of your own character is the thing that you must prioritize above anything else. And it's a disservice to tell young people, you know what, the greatest struggle in life is you against racism. The greatest struggle in life is you against... No, the greatest struggle in life is you going to be able to control your own impulses, to work up early to go to work, to say that I want to become a better and more developed human being. And put very simply, we as human beings... Thank you. We as conservatives believe that happiness is a choice. I'll let you guys determine if my wonderful comrades here are happy or not. We are. We're happy. Regardless of how bad things are falling apart in our country, we're happy to be alive. We're thankful for our existence. Happiness is a choice. If you go around trying to find happiness, All of a sudden, you'll seek pleasure over virtue. If you try to go find happiness as a state, it's nonsense. And we as Christians are commanded to be joyful in all circumstances. And this is a very important point, because sometimes in the Northeast, this message doesn't go over well, because it's kind of a gruff group of people in the Northeast at times. Sometimes don't see the sun like half the year. I get it. It's hard. No, but instead, happiness is a choice. It's a state of mind. It's something that you must commit yourself to. You must work at it too. You must say, man, what am I thankful for today? And I'm not trying to diminish suffering. Let me be very clear. Everybody here has something you're going through, and it's a serious thing. And if there's a way that we can help you, I pray that that'll show itself in that way. But that's not to say, what does it mean to live a fulfilling life? To walk around always looking at something worthy of protesting, tearing down, deconstructing, disassembling, or saying, man, if I made these 10 choices, if I stopped drinking, if I stopped doing drugs, if I stopped complaining, maybe my life will improve a little bit. Maybe if I all of a sudden start taking responsibility for my actions, I'll start to see the fruits of those choices. That's a fundamental difference. Because at the core, and I am not saying there are not public policy changes that need to be made. Trust me, there's plenty. But the real struggle that we must all understand is that it's you against you. That if you devote yourself to saying, you know what, I'll be happy as soon as we get universal health care. I'll be happy as soon as we get this person. That's never going to happen. Instead, we have a responsibility crisis in our country. What is responsibility? Responsibility is when you have an activity or you're doing something and you don't show up and that enterprise falls apart. If a husband doesn't show up at home, all of a sudden the wife is what's going on. Things are falling apart. If all of a sudden someone doesn't show up to work and you're a necessary job, all of a sudden things start falling apart. The reason we have so many people searching for purpose in our country is because we have said to so many students, don't go find responsibility, go find immediate pleasure and gratification. That we must instead prioritize things that make you have to all of a sudden challenge yourself. Character is developed in the challenge. Strength rejoices in the challenge. And we sometimes need to say, you know what? It's a good thing that you got to live a little bit tougher of a circumstance right now as a 17, 18, or 19-year-old. It'll make you a tougher person in the long run. Instead of removing all sort of speech that might offend them, instead of saying that we can never have you exposed to something you might disagree with, instead, I think we should try to create a nation that, similar to the greatest generation, is able to step up heroically and courageously at the toughest times and say, you know what, that in and of itself will create better and happier and more thankful people. That, more than politics, is actually something we need to hone on, which actually instructs our politics heavily. Okay, last thing that I want to touch on. I got so much stuff. I kind of talked about Bernie Sanders. He's a joke. Total joke. He's not a joke. I said joke. I know hearing might not be your strong suit. I can't hear you with your two masks on. I can't see your beautiful smile. God gave you a face. Let's see it. Oh, you don't believe in God. I forgot. He's a joke. J-O-K-E. I'll say it slower. He has manipulated well-meaning young people into believing in utopias just around the corner instead of telling them the truth, which is stop doing drugs, stop drinking, take responsibility for your actions, work harder, and stop making complaining the most important thing in your life. He has misled people at every single turn. And he's gotten rich while doing it. Bernie Sanders is a true socialist. He would have given away his book. He wouldn't have charged $27 per piece. Instead, he wants to get rich. He wants to make money. And I will say this out of the Bernie folks here, Burlington. Boy, you guys were gamed for the last two elections. I'll tell you what. That well-meaning Bernie bros were taken advantage of the last two elections for all of the activist energy that I will admit you guys have, for all of the door knocking. You were deceived by two corporate Wall Street bought candidates that made lies and overtures to Bernie Sanders. And it was stolen from Bernie. And what's amazing is how the young Democrat Socialists of America put up with it. It's like, you know what? It got stolen from us twice. We got totally run over. And I guess, you know, we're just going to take it. I'm just waiting for the moment for the socialists on the left to say, you know what? Our biggest, the people that have lied to us the most are not the conservatives. It's the people within the left itself. And yet it seems as if this is just going to keep on happening. And I would feel sorry for them, but their ideas are so terrible. So I really don't. And so I don't. And so socialism is rooted in a worldview that any success, any wealth, any treasure comes from stealing and theft. We believe that markets are the best way to improve people's lives. And it comes back to this question, which is, what kind of society do you want to live in? We want to live in a free and family-focused society. We want to live in one that prioritizes the good, the true, and the beautiful over the corrupt, the complaining, and the mobilization of grievances. That we know that it is rare to have an affluent society. And I'll close with this, and then we can do some questions, which is always, we're going to have some fun, which is, you want to know how good we have it? Affluence covers a multitude of sins. Luxury allows you the ability to care about being woke. You think they care about that in Guatemala, El Salvador? They're worried about crime, their currency not being deteriorated and diminished. Only in a wealthy society is someone given the opportunity, the leisure, and the free time to be woke. Only in a society as with so much abundance that we have, do you have the ability to be able to go read White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo or How to Be an Anti-Racist. You are living in a society that is made thanks to the sacrifices of generations before, thanks to strong families, a moral center, entrepreneurs that created so much wealth beyond your wildest imaginations that you now have the opportunity and the liberty to go pursue these awful and dangerous ideas. And that is only possible in a free society that I hope that we can preserve and protect for future generations. Thank you, guys. Let's do some questions. Questions here. Jonah, raise your hand. If you disagree, go to the front of the line. Open offer to any young Democrat socialist. Instead, just go right up to the front of the line if you have questions. And please make it questions, not speeches. Keep them short and to the point. And let's have some fun. First? Yes, first question.
Let's try to get some questions.
Yeah. I got you. Hi, Mr. Kirk. How are you? So I come from a long line of people who've worked for a very long time, 60 hours a week plus pretty much the entire time. We've been told over the last year and a half that basically it has only been because of the pandemic that people are working less, staying home from work. I kind of have a different theory, and I was wondering your take on it. How much of it do you think is the pandemic itself versus perhaps a younger generation that is not willing to put in manual labor when they can make the same hourly wage doing other jobs?
So let me ask you, just amongst your family members that do work those 60 hours a week, yeah, what do they have to say? What is their theory?
So my mom believes that there's a change in what young people want and what they're willing to go through. My father is less than pleased that people, he believes that a 40-hour work week is not sustainable to be successful. So in order to be successful, truly, yeah, you have to work more than 40 hours.
Yeah. And so this is an interesting point. Let me first say where, I think the conservative movement is moving in the right direction with this family focused agenda, which is, I think that we as conservatives, and Elizabeth Warren used to believe this before she didn't, we as conservatives should say, no, it's true. And during her Native American times, she used to believe this, where she said that a woman should not have to get into the workforce to support a nuclear family if they don't want to. Now, in the 1980s, you could support a family of four with 36 hours of work a week, or 36 weeks of work a year. I'm sorry, with 16 idle weeks a year. Now it takes 53 weeks a year to support the same amount. And so we as conservatives should agree that that's not a good thing. So how do we actually go about solving it? You know, without massive intervention into the economy, we should say, well, it is kind of this subset of companies that are continually kind of pushing forth this kind of agenda of forego having children, don't get married, come work for kind of this godless, soulless institution. And, you know, absent of kind of, you know, saying that we should dramatically abolish private property, which would be a dumb thing, we should say, you know what? We should explore ideas to try and make it easier to have children and have larger families. And I think that you're starting to see this advocated in a variety of different ways on the conservative side. But here's the difference, though, is that, you know, we as conservatives believe having families is an objective moral good. The other side would say, no, you should get the money regardless. And I don't think that's the case at all. We are seeing a massive problem with having children in our country, largely because it's too expensive to have children in our country. Now, let me also say this, though, that spending $4.7 trillion in Washington, D.C., on top of another $6 trillion, is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard in my life and will actually destroy the American worker, not help the American worker. And we're in the middle of an inflation crisis right now. But I think the jury's still out, but I probably agree with you that many people in our generation, they look down on manual work. They look down on the muscular class. They look down on people that work with their hands. And I think that we as conservatives, we need to value the middle class. Aristotle said that the middle class will be the future of society. And honestly, President Trump did a wonderful job of prioritizing the American middle class. He really did. And talking about it and delivering results for them, which I think was terrific. We have to do even more. And I also just think it's laughable, to be perfectly honest, that people on the left, they talk a game like, oh yeah, we want to protect families and do all these things. And yet they're the ones that do not actually want to get serious about reining in the pharmaceutical companies as they're mandating the vaccine and their profiteering scheme all across the country. They're the ones that don't want to rein in technology companies. And then they're the ones that actually wanted to forcibly lock down the American economy, where we lost 600,000 small businesses in the last year and a half. The forcible lockdowns of the American economy will go down as one of the worst mistakes in American history, with almost zero net benefit and casualties of damage to our generation and generations to come. Mental health issues, suicide issues, alcoholism, drug issues, all to try to kill a mouse with a missile, when in reality, we should have been very clear that a certain age demographic is very much at risk from the Fauci virus. That if you're younger, you are not at sizable risk. Instead of misleading people about what the vaccine could do, we should have had a very serious conversation about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, vitamin D, and other treatments. And the numbers speak for themselves. Vermont is the most vaccinated state in the country. And now you're experiencing the highest virus rates that you have in the entire cycle of this pandemic. And it's unfortunate. And I'm not trying to say that's a good thing by any means. I think it's an awful and terrible thing. But instead, we were never honest about what we were really dealing with. I think it's a mixture of all those things. And thank you for your question, for being here. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I had to see if I could hold it, but I guess not, hands-free. But hey, good to meet you. You've been talking a lot about activists, and you've been kind of, I guess, going on a bit about this young Lil Rel going on. My big question for you is, what's the difference between them, the yellow shirts, or even you? You talk so much about how they're wrong, how their activists are going against you. What's the big difference?
Well, first of all, I've never tried to cancel a speaker because I disagree with them, or try to go to a hotel and try to cancel their contract.
What? Hey, okay, I'm back. I was just... So you're talking about this, though. You're going against CRT. Is that not just doing exactly what they're doing? They're talking against it.
You do realize they went to the previous hotel and pressured them to try to pull the contract, right?
No, like...
No, you're not. Yeah, you're not aware. Okay, got it. And also, let me just say this. So what makes us different? Well, first of all, our entire worldview is, as I mentioned, rooted in a belief of the natural law, liberty, freedom, gratitude, American history, self-empowerment, and fulfillment, where as the worldview of the opposition, which I'm glad they came here tonight, is not. It's the opposite of all those things. But as you'll notice, we let them into our event because we think it's important that, you know, different ideas are actually allowed a platform to be able to be heard. Does that answer your question?
Okay, thank you. I couldn't answer you for it. But no, it actually doesn't. My question is, at the very basis, is, yeah, y'all can laugh all you want. My
they're laughing
is,
because you're hilariously wrong.
Hey, can I hold you a little bit? No. Okay. No, so, yeah, okay, great.
So let me just ask the question. When have I ever advocated for canceling a speaker on a college campus?
I don't watch
Never.
You, I'm
That's
sorry.
The difference. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Okay, next question.
Question. What's that?
Turn it to Randy's question.
Okay, next question.
This is kind of a long one. So I'm a libertarian, but I support CRT. I think it gives a chance for the left to say, you know, what the heck is this, and redeem themselves. Across the country, you see parents coming together, talking to school boards, and, you know, their voices are being silenced. You know, they're turning their mics off at the school boards, and it's really uniting the country, I think. So it's like, you know, a flip. Well, we're coming together to fight this, and I think it's very important that we do that. So do you think things like this to help liberals change their minds because of things such that are so extreme? Do you think that things like this actually help us?
Yeah, I hear you. That's kind of like saying, you know, the other side advocating for eugenics actually helps us, which is CRT is a cousin of eugenics. I hear your viewpoint. Some people say, yeah, it's a political gift to us. Yeah, but we shouldn't even be having this conversation. I mean, when you're dealing with treacherously evil ideas, yeah, I hope that there's some sort of unity against it. I can't believe that 40% of Americans still support CRT. But I think you're coming from it from a good place. They're like, hey, we finally have something that unites, you know, the conservative libertarian factions together. But I wish this wasn't even an issue. We're in a very dangerous situation, in my personal opinion, where we're starting to have black-only graduation ceremonies, black-only dormitories. I don't think that's a good thing. I think that actually brings us closer to any form of racial chaos and societal division. But I think your point, I understand it. I might disagree with it. Where you say, hey, it's a good thing because it's actually uniting people and it's showing how intolerant the other side is. Let's be careful with that argument, though, because now it's become policy. They're hiring airline pilots at United Airlines based on skin color, not on competency. Now, I don't know about you. When I fly on a United Airlines plane, I don't care what the color of the skin of my pilot is. I want them to be able to land the plane. And so I don't know if I disagree with you. I see where you're saying, though, that it does wake people up. It gets them going. But we're on very dangerous footing, though. Thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Internet privacy is extremely important. New news out shows that Google has been colluding with the federal government to hand over your data if you might have searched something wrong into the search bar. So what are you doing to protect your search history? Well, this is why you need ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like going to the bathroom and not closing the door. It's in fact even worse than that. It's inviting someone into the bathroom, which is really weird and creepy. Internet service providers know every single website you visit. ISPs can sell this data and information to ad companies and tech giants who then use your data to target you. ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, so your online activity cannot be seen by anyone. It's as easy as closing the bathroom door and fire up the app and click one button. I use it on all my devices. Every device, I have those beautiful three letters with a rectangle around it. It's rated number one by CNET and Tech Radar. Here's the cool thing. It works on phones, laptops, and even routers, so everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected. Here's the thing. I have it on my iPhone. I have it on my iPad. I have it on my computer. ExpressVPN for me has been a game changer to be able to know that the tech companies or the government, they have to go through a whole nother barrier to try to spy on us. When we see with the new announcements out of DC, if you spoke at a school board meeting lately, you better get a VPN. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/Charlie today. That's expressvpn.com/Charlie. It's extremely important to anonymize your online activity. expressvpn.com/Charlie.
Hey, man, thank you for coming here to Walkland. Appreciate it. Great to see you. I'm an immigrant from Eastern Europe, and I've been here for 10 years and a little bit. And if anybody would have told me 10 years ago that I would come a day where I would live in America and American citizens would be in favor of communism, I would have laughed in their face. So obviously, I have my own opinion about why this is happening, but what is your take? Why do you think U.S. citizens, man, are in favor of communism in America? It feels that it's getting more and more.
What country are you from?
Romania.
So Ceausescu, you know all about. So I'm curious, what would your message be to young socialists that don't know what communism is?
If you don't learn from history, nothing will save you.
What, and
So let me ask you, your family grew up in Romania and had to go through all those horrors.
Yeah.
And most people are totally unfamiliar with the actual suffering, the actual difficulty, the actual issues that people had because of communism. And it's very interesting that Americans that have never had to wait in bread lines until now, that have never had to actually understand what suffering is, they are very quick to try to shut down and shout down opinions they disagree with. But I want to actually ask you, I want you to just say very briefly, what was it like for your family to grow up in these sort of ideas? Why do you hate communism? Why? Because of the suffering that your family went through?
So obviously, I was only 1 year old when communism ended in Romania, so I can't really speak from previous experience, but I have yet to meet anybody in my home country that was in favor of communism. So let me put it this way. When they came in power, they seized all private property.
FYI.
And after that, you had punch card, guys, to get bread.
Yes.
And it would be rationed based on the size of your family. No meat, no eggs, no stuff like that. And like I said, nobody's in favor of it except...
So let me ask you a question. Are you thankful that you live in America?
Yeah.
That's what 100%. Makes you different than them. Thank you. Appreciate you being here tonight, man. Thank you. God bless you. Next question.
All right. So first off, great pleasure having you here, sir. But my main question is, like, I agree completely with everything you said. And there are a lot of issues that are going on. But with all us essentially, no offense, whining about it, how would you go about reversing years of damage to our education system that has restored our values? Because I agree with you, sir, but the solution that you gave wasn't necessarily clear. So I'm just curious, like, what do you think about that? Because this is an institutional problem at this point.
Of the education system? Or
yes, sir. Like,
yeah,
because look at the extent that it's gone in the last 2 years where we've destroyed our own heroes for essentially either misinformation or just seeing one part of it, whereas people are just showed one part and then that's all they're showed and they're expected to keep with that.
Yeah, look, I just want to say... I'm not exactly sure the right way to take that, but yeah, the education system is a massive threat to our liberty and the American way of life. Every parent who can should homeschool their kids if they can. And I think that it's incredibly important that we recognize that the public sector education system is the life source of these ideas that you then see manifested on television and in the halls of Congress. What happens in college campuses and on college campuses does not stay on college campuses. It goes into the halls of Congress and corporate boardrooms. And look, it really comes back to this question of what is education? Education comes from a Latin word, which means to lead forth. And we need to lead forth children and young people to truth, to people of good character, to understand what is good, what is objectively true in this world, and also a true reading of history, which is not happening anymore. And so... Yeah, I mean, I'm well in support of abolishing the Department of Education. I have been for quite some time. I think abolishing the Department of Education would be a vast step forward. And I think that we need to empower parents more to have says in their children's education, have say in their children's education, and understanding that the current regime is benefiting tremendously from this sort of power structure. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi, sir. So, again, my question is also based on the education system, as that gentleman that was just up here. But when it comes down to it, would you say that the largest problem that we have with our education system currently today is the fact that we put too much government control into it and not enough individual control into someone's own education? Because, you know, if you look at instances in the past, such as, you know, with several of our founding fathers, or even going up to the 1930s and 1940s, most of the educated populace in the United States had come from people who decided to educate themselves and not depend on a big, essentially parent government to do so.
Yeah, I mean, look, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. And so the more we send young people to these corrupt education institutions that don't just teach bad ideas, but also get our students endlessly into debt, it creates this kind of cycle of dependency. And so, yeah, I also just want to kind of contribute to the conversation that you don't need to go to college to succeed in America, that we need more welders and electricians and plumbers, police officers, and we love our police. Don't we love our police here? We love our police. But I wanted to say this. We need to develop people of strong character, which is something the education system has lost. Okay, next question. Thank you for being here tonight.
Hi, Charlie. So I agree with everything that you present all the time. I watch you constantly. This is my son. My kids and I watch all of this. I didn't know I was a conservative until I watched you. Wow. And I'm going to be 40 years old. So, and I'm not Thank from you. Vermont. I'm from Philadelphia. So I've lived here for a few years. I've been doing exactly this. I fought in Burlington. People may have read me in the newspaper. I fought against the BLM flag. I wanted it down, and I wanted people to understand what it really meant. I come from a mixed family. So CRT breaks my heart, and it kills me. I pulled my kids out of school. I homeschool. But I have one very... Because I'm from a mixed family, I have one question for you, and I don't know how you can answer it for me. I would like to understand where Conservative Party sits with our treaties, because I have two members of my family that are Native American, my brother and my husband. And I follow a lot of the things that go on. I know about treaties. I teach my kids about the Natives and the real history. Mm-hmm. You know, I push for real history, not this narrative, you know, of what's going on. So where does the conservatives sit with this? Because I never hear anything about it, and I feel like I'm a lone voice. Yeah. Advocating for them.
Yeah, I haven't been asked that question in a while. I probably sympathize with you more than most, which is that, you know, the Native American population was given a real, obviously, raw deal and was exploited and was abused. Where the treaties are, I can't really comment on that because I'm not as well read into that, especially this part of the world. I will say that in states like Oklahoma, Arizona, New Mexico, this is a top issue because of the sizable Native American population. So I'm happy to talk to you privately about that. Not exactly something I'm that well read up on, to be perfectly honest. But I do want to say thank you for your kind words at the beginning of kind of how I was able to impact kind of your beliefs and what you believe in. And I believe it's a conservative value to respect people that were here indigenously and strike that balance. And I also want to say this, though, that we have done a disservice through the Bureau of Indian Affairs by almost instituting socialism on these Native American reservations. Those good intentions have done the opposite. It's actually hurt a lot of Native American and indigenous populations across the country when it might have been intended to help. They have the highest rates of alcoholism, some of the worst outputs healthcare-wise, especially if you visited a Native American reservation, especially out west, they're unfortunately some of the most depressing places you could go to. So happy to talk privately about that. But thank you for being here tonight and your kind words. God bless you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm hoping that you could explain without using a single buzzword or a conservative talking point what CRT is.
So you want to go back to Herbert Marcuse, the Frankfurt School, Michel Foucault, Jacques Derrida,
one-dimensional man. I want you to answer my question.
No, I'm just asking you, how far back do you want me to go?
I want you to explain what CRT is.
What CRT is comes out of critical theory, which came out of the Frankfurt School, which is a belief that there are systems that exist both institutionally and systemically, and that through critical theory, which also has critical law theory, through the kind of the changing of how we view society must be through a racial lens and not through a economic lens or through a legal lens. And if you look very clearly at the writings of Marcuse, at the writings of Spinoza, especially in the early 1990s where this started to pop up, there was this idea that we must give preference based on the melanin content of people's skin, not on actions, not on choices. And instead, because America is so unequal, because it is so inequitable, that these writers and authors that were the beginning people that actually started this term critical race theory 50 or 60 years ago believed that this would be a true Marxist type movement that would help happen in this country. It was kind of fostered and started in many different universities across this country. Marcuse came from the Frankfurt School. One of his disciples is still alive, Angela Davis. And it really kind of comes back to the couple beliefs that CRT believes in, to make it overly simple. Number one, that there is no such thing as absolute truth. That number two, power dynamics are more important than anything else. Number three, skin color should be something that has a top priority in how we characterize people and their worth and their dignity. Number four, that kind of American history history and kind of how we teach it is completely wrong. Five, that America is systemically racist, and I could continue from that. That right there is a 35,000-foot view. Happy to go deeper, but that is the history of critical race theory. And it's evolved into terms of wokeism, diversity, equity, inclusion, the idea of America being systemically racist, 1619 Project. They're all outgrowths of the postmodern deconstructionist type viewpoint that started in the 1960s from Marcuse, who was a Marxist type believer in the Frankfurt School, was expelled, found domicile here in America, and implemented in our colleges. How'd I do?
I do appreciate that response. Thank you. You did use the word wokeism, which is a conservative buzzword, unfortunately. I'm going to take my seat. Thank you.
How about this? How about this? Garbage. Next question.
Hello. It's an honor to be here. I'm from Dartmouth College, and I have to say I'm so proud to be an American. I feel so blessed to have been born in this country. And as you know... Our institutions of higher education are overwhelmingly liberal and left-leaning. So my question is, what advice do you have for students like me, for students like many of us, who are deeply conservative at overwhelmingly liberal colleges where our peers feel that because of their left-leaning beliefs, they're often morally and intellectually superior, where securing our borders is fascist and where protecting the unborn is hateful? What advice do you have for us?
So you go to Dartmouth?
I do.
Is it pretty liberal?
Very liberal.
Yeah, very liberal. First of all, you deserve to be applauded. The fact that you're an outspoken conservative at Dartmouth is a big deal. It is. And I want everyone watching online and watching, you know, or listening to the podcast, understand the significance of what you're doing. You have decided to be the same person in public that you are in private. It's a big deal. You've decided to be courageous enough to come to an event like this to say, you know what? I believe this. I might lose friends. I might be mocked. I might be ridiculed. So you're going to have to make a decision. I think you've already made that decision. The decision you have to make is whether or not you are willing to live through or to survive, I guess you could say, the kind of backlash, the sort of price that you're going to have to pay. But guess what? You're going to be tougher because of it. And here's my advice to you. Grow your Turning Point USA group. Be unapologetic in your beliefs. You're going to be called every single name in the books. Learn something new every single day. Dive deep into the ideas. This will make you a more magnanimous and complete and properly souled individual. And you'll be a happier person because of that. So God bless you. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Charlie. Pleasure to meet you. I'm a UVM student. Might be one of the only ones here who doesn't hate you. First off, I wanted to thank you. My wife and I did. We just got married in July. You actually gifted us books, MAGA Doctrine. I emailed you. You sent us the books. Don't know if you remember, but thank you for that gift.
We felt
it very important to get married young, 21 and 19. So anyway, my question for you is, my major is computer science. I'm a senior. I don't really know what to do for a job because my entire industry is basically saturated with libs. I don't want to work for Tim Cook or Sundar Pichai or whatever his name is at Google or
Pichai
whatever.
Or whatever, yeah.
So I was wondering, give me something to do. Where tech's a big issue.
My job now? Okay, sure. So
where can my computer science know?
So I will give you something, which is this. Which is outside of the woke tech companies, there are thousands of small and mid-level businesses of people that are not totally corrupted by this. Go find one of them and work for them. And you might say, how do I find them? There is an ever-growing job market of employers that are trying to find non-activistic employees that are going to do their job, that are married and that want to work really hard and advance in their career. And we are being contacted by these employers every single day. So you might say, how do I find them? Go to the middle level of companies, companies that have like 250 to 500 employees. Apple, Google, Facebook, Dropbox, Salesforce, Twitter. You know what you're going to get out of those. But here's the good news. You have a skill. You went to college and you got something out of it that not everyone gets out. You didn't go study North African lesbian poetry or, you know, Central Nicaraguan, you know, underwater basket weaving or whatever.
you studied computer science, so you're going to be very wealthy and very happy. Just be very wise and prudent in the type of job that you choose. And make sure you choose a job that respects you for who you are, your viewpoint, and that you do not have to pretend to be somebody else. Thank you for those kind words. And I want to say this. You getting married at a young age, you'll be blessed because of that. God bless you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm a UVM student. I was talking to you before. I'm sure you noticed that. But I'm going to try to keep this simple.
Heckling, yes.
Yeah. But I'm just going to hope you respond in a way that's not so just conservative talking point and more of a conversation way. Hopefully. Maybe?
Sure.
Okay. So before there was a question about like Native American communities and treaties and stuff like that. And you were talking about how historically Native Americans have been kind of like screwed over by the U.S. government and stuff like that. Don't you think that that history will impact how Native Americans live today and make it more difficult to succeed in America? Don't you think that would influence that?
Well, I suppose a question I'll ask back at you. We've made tremendous accommodations, such as sovereignty of Native American land, an entire department of the federal government dedicated just solely to that. Do you recognize that there's been great efforts to try to accommodate that?
I recognize those efforts, but obviously they haven't worked.
So why haven't they worked?
Because it's either not enough or the way that we're doing it is like we need to treat it more as an equity thing instead of just saying, oh, it's a culture, like instead of blaming it on people's like individual working and like make like change it societally and help them in a way that actually matters.
So you do know that there's universal health care at Native American reservations, right?
Yeah, but it's not very good because they don't have access to.
Because it's socialistic.
No. They have universal health care in plenty of European countries, and it works just fine. The flaws of the Native American.
So I'm curious, how did Vermont's experiment in universal health care go?
I'm not from Vermont, so I don't know these things.
I didn't hear your response. Say that again.
I'm not from Vermont, so I don't know these things. I moved here like 2 months ago.
Yeah, I still can't hear what you said. Say it one more time. You're wearing a mask. It's kind of hard. Can you say it again?
I moved here like 2 months ago. I'm not from Vermont, so yeah, I don't know these things.
Right. So Vermont tried single payer. They had to abolish it. It was a total disaster. So look, I think the best way that to help Native American communities is to help all people through empowerment and education. Instead, we tried a heavy-handed government approach of intervention of the Bureau of Native American Affairs, of universal health care. And if you want to go see a socialist dystopia, go to a Native American reservation. Maybe you worked on Native American reservations before. I've been to plenty. They're depressing. They're government addicted, unfortunately, in more ways than one. They're very, very corrupt. And this is something I want to ask you. Would you self-identify as a socialist? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Ish.
I'm not a liberal. I'm more social. I'm
okay.
Socialist and liberal are different words, and I think conservatives confuse that a lot. They're completely different things. Okay.
No, we don't. So I'm just curious, as someone who would say you're a socialist, what would be a country you think works well that's a socialist country?
There are no socialist countries right now.
There are no has there ever been a socialist country?
Truly socialist? No.
Okay. Your worldview is on something that's never existed and currently doesn't exist?
Is it a bad thing to be like pro change? Like people who lived in like only monarchies wanted democracy and stuff like that. That wasn't like a bad thing.
Okay, so just so we're clear. No. The type of change you're advocating is horrifying. But so it's never existed, doesn't. And so I would say Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, formerly Vietnam, the Soviet Union, those were not socialist countries.
The disastrous effects in those countries were directly contributed by U.S. intervention. There were multiple coups done by the CIA in
those
countries.
All right, so hold on, guys. I'm just curious. And so how on earth did Fidel Castro taking over Cuba have anything to do with U.S. intervention?
There was plenty of like sanctions. Like economically, Cuba was completely cut off. There was no. They tried to assassinate him plenty of times. There were
no,
so many
the
things.
The fact that
the
they're communist.
Yeah.
We had what to do with that?
We didn't have anything to do with that, but we after a communist regime took over, they had a...
Yeah, so yeah. Let me ask you another... So first of all, Zimbabwe was not communist?
Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara.
Say that again?
Thomas Sankara, Burkina Faso. Before he was assassinated, he was actually...
How about Mugabe? He wasn't a communist? How about Joseph Stalin? He wasn't a communist?
He called himself
How about Mao Zedong? He wasn't a communist?
Yeah.
Pol Pot?
Plenty of terrible people have called themselves plenty of different names. North Korea,
oh, so you get
North
to be
Korea
the judge. Got it.
Democratic.
Okay.
They're not democratic.
Right. So I just want to make sure we complete the point. You believe in something that doesn't exist, has never existed, and even though the people that call themselves the things that you believe, you say they weren't really that, which is the most important point. Socialism is always judged against an impossible utopia, and they judge markets against a reality. And here's the truth of the matter. That markets, which you enjoy comfortably in Western society, is the most proven affluent creating machine in human history. And I would just challenge you to do one thing. Please stop believing in a utopian nightmare and start looking at things around you that are good, that are true, that are beautiful, that work, and are consistent with the natural law. You'll be a much happier person if you do that. Thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to meet you. I just have one quick question. What is your opinion on mandatory vaccinations in the military? Personally, it was almost mandatory at my college, unless you wanted to use a religious exemption. What is your view on that?
So we at Turning Point USA, we've taken an organizational view that no person should be forced to get the vaccine against their will. And it is immoral and it is wrong and it is evil to force people to get vaccines, experimental medicine. You might be pro-vaccine here tonight, whatever. I'm not here to convince you otherwise. The fact is, don't force me otherwise. Don't use force of losing a job, government force, or all of these sorts of, you know, different ways to try and mock and ridicule and push people in a direction to do that. So are you in the military right now or?
I'm not, no.
Okay. Well, for people that are in the military, this is a very serious thing. And it's time for elected officials that are conservatives to start to stand up and to defend the medical rights of servicemen and women across the country. And no one should be forced to get it against their will. I've been very public on this issue. And the final thing I'll say with this, it was kind of with this, is that I was always told to believe my body, my choice, you know, everyone's individual sovereignty. Instead, now it's let's do whatever Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, and Johnson want. And the latest study shows the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is 3% effective. 3% effective. You know what's effective? They never want to talk about natural immunity. They never want to talk about azithromycin. They never want to talk about hydroxychloroquine. They never want to talk about ivermectin. They never want to talk about aspirin, which is now proven to be a very effective treatment to reduce hospitalizations. And you can look at the clinical data itself. Instead, they are trying to keep people in a perpetual state of fear and control by locking us down, masking us up, and firing people based on vaccines. We must take a stand against that. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Hi, very nice to meet. Oh, sorry. Okay, great. Hi, very nice to meet you. So I don't want to go back to because I was going to address what the young woman was saying. I was born in the UK, so I know what socialist medicine is like. It does not work. Okay. Also, my parents are from Jamaica and my grandparents are from Cuba. My dad's parents had to flee Cuba. His uncles had their property, their land, their money, everything taken from them. So we know socialism, communism, Marxism does not work. Also, I also want to talk on the note of critical race theory. UVM is the worst place possible. I am very much a conservative. I'm also Jewish, as you can see. and I have experienced, so these people who are quote unquote woke have actually been racist to me. They have been anti-Semitic and they have been racist. One, including instructors too, people who are supposed to be teaching us. I'm right. A pre-med student. I'm not coming here to do foolishness under basket weaving. I expect to be taught and not be taught with some twisted agenda right. behind it. And that's what I've been taught. And I try to sparse out what I can and move on and make sure I'm going ahead to get my medical degree. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, God bless you. Do you have a question or no? God bless you. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. Well, you could stop imagining because it's reality, everybody. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat is stealing their business and robbing you of the quality and flavor you deserve. China has destroyed the American economy through dumping products, and they've also waged war on American ranchers. It's time to stick it to China, and that's what Good Ranchers does so well. They exist to support local American farms that help you make great American meals. Together, they want to restore the American ranch and your meals to the former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that cannot be imported or matched at goodranchers.com. Did you know that the product of USA tag has been stolen by foreign countries? They process their meat here and then label it like it came from America fraudulently. Because of these labeling laws that favor foreign imported meat, over 100,000 independent American farms and ranches have closed since 2015. Good Ranchers is here to put America first at the dinner table, and the ranchers that have worked raise the meat we eat. They send you a box. Everyone listening to this needs to eat and feed their family. And if you want to support our program, if you like the Charlie Kirk Show, you can kill two birds, one stone. Buy really good meat and get food because you have to eat anyway, and support our program at goodranchers.com/Charlie right now and save $20 off, or better yet, subscribe and save the box of mouth-watering meats. I'm telling you, they send us these meats. And there is a fight over who gets the perfectly marbled filet mignon or the marinated chicken. It is a beautiful sight when the box of meats arrive at our office. Our mouths are watering. The children begin singing. Everything just seems a little bit lighter. And in fact, the day gets better when the Good Ranchers box arrives, because you know, with the beautiful Phoenix weather, you can watch some college football, throw a couple steaks on the grill, turn up the volume, and enjoy being an American. Because you're eating American meat, not Chinese meat, not Argentinian meat, not Vietnam meat, Vietnamese meat, not Iranian meat, not Egyptian meat, but instead American meat. So save on each box of mouth-watering American meats. Go to goodranchers.com/Charlie. They've been amazing partners. I'm such a big believer in this company. Use promo code Charlie at checkout. Goodranchers.com/Charlie. They send you this box of meat that you can feed your family and also support this program, as you guys know how hard we are working to save the country. Goodranchers.com/Charlie.
Good evening, sir. I got to say, I'm a little sad that my friends from UVM left, because this question was geared a little bit towards them, but I guess I can take my mask off now. So this question might be a little bit enraging to especially my friends on the left and maybe some people on the right as well. But I come from the great state of New York, where I interned for our Republican Congresswoman, Claudia Tenney. Love her to death. And when I worked for her, I was attacked by the left every day by keyboard warriors for allegedly being anti-immigrant, anti-LGBTQ, and anti-feminist. The ironic side of this is that I grew up in an inner city environment with a single mother who came from a socialist Yugoslavia, where they murdered those who spoke out in favor of minority and LGBTQ rights. And also, shocking to hear, to a lot on the left, I am a bisexual Republican with a wonderful girlfriend. So that's a little scary to people, I guess. But aside from all of this, the only identity I really can associate myself truly is an American at the end of the day. So how will young conservatives and libertarians like myself save our comrades on the left from the horrid lives of socialism and identity politics that not everyone needs to conform to their individual way of life, which a lot of them do not seem to realize?
thank you for being here tonight. That's a great question. And I just want to say, look, I think our first guy that asked that question was kind of spot on. The reason why conservatives, libertarians are kind of agreeing at this very moment is because of this issue, is because they're trying to put in identity politics, trying to organize people based on, you know, unchangeable type characteristics. And so I guess your question specifically was, what do we do about this kind of social tyranny that we're living through? Well, you being here and speaking out, it drives them crazy, right? Is that here's a very important thing, that they want to try to have social control over us. They want to try to be able to say, you can't speak here, you can't do that, that we are the final say. We have the, you know, heckler's veto, if you will. Like, we're not going to put up with that. Like, the more you try to resist us, the more we want to come to Burlington. The more you try to cancel us, the more we actually want to show up. And so I would just want to encourage you to keep on speaking out, regardless if they call you anti this, anti that. It's meaningless, garbage type phrases that they try to use to suppress speech, that they try to use to control opposition and try to have good ideas not be spread. But thank you for being here tonight, and glad you took the mask off. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Stacy, and I am recently unemployed as of 7 a.m. this morning due to mandated vaccines brought upon my employer. Do I have time to read a quick little tidbit?
Yeah, please.
Of my employer's perspective? Hospitals in Vermont and nationwide have struggled to balance the imperative to have all staff vaccinated for COVID with the need to maintain service levels during the pandemic. Our current outbreak of COVID in the hospital demonstrates a need for an organization-wide mandate for a COVID vaccination. Unvaccinated retreat staff have infected other staff and patients. Admissions have been disrupted. So clearly avoiding mandated vaccinations has not prevented service impacts to our operation. If anything, unvaccinated staff are a significant reason for disruption, illness, exceptional costs, and effort related to the outbreak. I am an unvaccinated staff member. I lost my job. I was unable to get a medical exemption because of my doctor's hands being tied by their administration at Dartmouth. Where do we go from here? And also, I wanted to add in that religious exemptions were denied.
So
what do we do here?
I want to say you have courage. And if more Americans had courage like you, America would be in a much better place, truly. And can I comment on this for a second?
I would love for you to comment.
I don't know where the kind of Vermont rebel spirit is standing up for fighting the man. No, it's said, get the vaccine or you're a terrible person or we're fighting you, we're firing you. Like, really? Like, Vermont has now become no longer the place of communes or the free spirit. It's now the place of, no, obey what we tell you to do or else we're going to destroy your life. And that kind of runs contrary to everything I thought that Vermont was always trying to advocate for. Anti-corporate, individual choice, you know, do whatever drug you want to do whenever you want to do it, which I obviously disagree with. Then it's like, oh, no, you must take the vaccine or else we're going to punish you. If you live in New Hampshire, Vermont.
Actually, I live in New Hampshire, but
yeah, I could tell by your question.
Up until this morning in Vermont for 6.5 years.
Yeah. Got it. So you're right across the border. Okay. So what do you do? The Lord will bless you for your strong stand. I know that might not be comforting to you. I know that you're like, I don't even, you know, maybe you're like, I don't believe that. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but sorry, go ahead.
I feel that I will be blessed. And this is a new beginning for myself, but I know that many others that I worked with were forced into it, not happy about it, wrote their emails about it afterwards. And it put a lot of people in a very, a big predicament of choosing what they believe and what they believe is right for their body and their livelihood. There are many that stood my ground and did not, and they are losing employees, but it's this people, what do they do now?
Do you work for a hospital, you said? Or?
I worked for the Brattleboro Retreat in Brattleboro, Vermont for 6.5 years.
Well, I'm laughing. I'm saying, wait, if we're in the middle of a pandemic, why are we firing hospital workers and healthcare workers, right? What are we doing?
No option to mask or test every week. There's many of us that were on board with doing that. We will mask, we will test. And we're just, here we are.
Well, I want to just say this. I'm hearing thousands of stories about this across the country. You will find another job. It is a new beginning. And here's why you'll sleep well tonight. You can say, I'm free. I was not bullied. I was not tyrannized. I was not tormented. I was not controlled. That you are still in control of you. That's a big deal. And I know that you're going to pay a price for it. I know it's not easy, but I want you to know you are not alone. There are millions of Americans experiencing this alongside of you, and that you are now going to be able to say, you know what? They might take my job, but they'll never take my liberty, my agency, and my choice away from you. God bless you. Thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it.
What's up, Charlie? As you might hear, I'm from Germany. I'm actually from East Germany. So my family, in the last 110 years, has been through a monarchy. They've been through fascism, fascism, and socialism. And in the end, they were finally free. And take a wild guess which system they liked the most. Yes, it was freedom. So what I'm worried about is right now, when I came to the United States in 2018 as a student here, I saw the U.S. as like a beacon of freedom in the world. Like, you guys were free. You guys were patriots. I love that. Like, in Germany, it's not like that anymore. And now I came back. Like, I was a year in the military last year because of COVID and all that. And I just got back. And people like them, they tell me as socialists, like, what in the world? They're dismissing 300 million dead people done by Joseph Stalin, done by people in East Germany. My family, we had deaths because of that regime. So what can we do against it? What can we, like, foreigners like me here do against that? It's a plague. And I'm afraid that the U.S. is not what it's like supposed to be anymore.
I want to just emphasize this point. I'm going to ask you a question in a second, which is, we have foreign students coming to America fleeing totalitarianism through many generations to go be taught by our professors and bullied by our young people that they don't know what tyranny is. And so I want to ask you this question, which is, did you ever expect to come to an American university and have to be taught what socialism actually is?
Exactly. I never expected that. The first thing I saw when I like went into my faculty, right? Like one of the history professors, he had a picture of Karl Marx in front of it. Of Karl Marx. Like where I'm from, I got taught like about Marxism and all that. And people here worshiping Karl Marx, like in the U.S., I can't believe it. Absolutely wild. Like, how?
Well, I'll say this, that I hope Americans start to wake up and realize that what they are trying to bring into this country, what they are trying to implement, has already not been tried, but there is a horror show in their wake. And so let me ask you this. If Bernie Sanders was listening, what would you tell him?
I would say, Bernie, come over, look and talk to the people. Talk to the people that actually experience what you are preaching. Like, none of them, I also, just like my Romanian friend here, none of them will tell him that socialism is a good thing. And it's horrible that he's using the word socialism himself.
Well, here's one thing that touches me. You love America more than most Americans do. And God bless you for being here tonight. Thank you. Danke schön.
Hello, Charlie. I moved to America in 2018, and when I moved here, I was shocked when I see like most young people, and they take the Obamas or the Clinton as like people that fighting against racism. I was like, do you even know what these people even do to Haiti? Because I'm from Haiti. So yeah. These people, the Hillary Clinton, the Obama, these people, they stole billion dollars that could build hospital, school, you know, equip our police and everything. They take everything. So I was shocked when people say, oh, like, the Republican, the conservative people, they want that, racist, they hate black people, or all that BS. I was like, yo, you don't know what you're talking about. You should shut up. But I have a question too, Charlie, because I realized something when I moved here. I still like, not feel, but it's a reality. It's a fact. Like, there's a war against masculinity. Like, if you are a man, like, you say, like, I'm a man, so I can do it. Like, people say, oh, like, you're being toxic. Do you have any idea for a guy like me? Because, like, anywhere I go, man, like, I'm a man. I don't care whatever you said. I'm a man, you know? So,
you're a man. Now, you said you're from Haiti, right? And just like our other friends that spoke before, does it boil your blood to hear people talk negatively about this country?
You know, I'm always, I'm straight up. You know, anytime people say BS like that against me, especially young American, I want to punch you in the face. But here I'm going to jail. I can do that, you know. But it's people, I mean, life is so good. That's why you take it for granted, because privilege is invisible for those who have it. So wake up every day, your fridge have food and everything. You have electricity. You can go to school. Where I come from, I didn't have that chance. I have to work like 15 miles every day to go to school to know how to read. But you have PlayStation and Xbox, but you are complaining every day, and you are BLM, you are Antifa and all that BS. So, I mean, what is your take on that?
And so this goes back to my opening remarks, which is you've lived a tough life and now you have it better. Every day you wake up thankful. And that is the core bedrock, isn't it? That's the difference. Is that people that are not thankful to live in this country, they scoff at this. They say, human suffering is my Netflix not loading fast enough. My Uber Eats not getting there in time. You know what difficulty is. And you also know what the American ruling class has done to your home country. You know what the Clintons have done to Haiti, which is a very real thing of exploitation and also, of damage. I want to answer your direct question though. We need strong men in America. We need to have more men that are proud of being independent, of being competitive, strong, of being self-confident. And men and women need each other. And this, there is a war on men in our country. It's real and it's profound. Being masculine is not toxic. Instead, we need the balance between the feminine and the masculine. A good society has a balance between them both. And what we're trying to do is try to destroy men through a variety of different ways. And you see that now. And you're going to be a tough one for them to break, because you seem to me that you're not going to, you know, give into their sort of narrative and their nonsense. But it's very touching. You're now the third or fourth person that's come up and said, I wasn't born here, but you have no idea how good you have it here in America. And one last thought. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in Vermont, I've been called sellout. They called me all kind of names, Uncle Tom. I don't even know what this thing is till I Googled them. I was like, oh, that's nothing. You know, life goes on. But I mean, as a black man, it's hard in Vermont to be a conservative. I can tell you this. But they can break me down.
Let me ask you a question. How are you treated by white liberals?
They are the most racist people on earth, man. That's all I can tell you.
I agree. God bless you, my friend. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you.
Hello, Charlie.
All right, how are we doing?
So, pretty good. Well, as you can tell, I'm not from Vermont. I'm actually from Northern California, rural Northern California. So my question for you, so I'm employed by the federal government, and they press me to get a vaccine, and they press a lot of other people to get a vaccine. They're firing people back and forth, but we have elected officials that do not want to take the vaccine. So I wonder, what's your take on that?
I mean, look, again, no one should be forced to get their vaccine against their will. I have been doing everything I can to get elected officials to stand up for you, to stand up for your medical rights, to stand up for your autonomy. And we need to make more noise, everybody. If someone is calling for you, asking for money to go run for re-election, say, where do you stand on mandatory vaccines? Why are you forcing young, able-bodied adults? By the way, have you had COVID before? Have you had it?
Yeah, I've had it.
So you have natural immunity, and yet you're still being forced to get vaccinated. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so hold the line. I'm telling you, here's some hope. Here's some hope.
No, I have to take it.
Delta Airlines just came out and reversed their policy against mandatory vaccines a couple days ago. That these companies are starting to back down. That this is becoming an unpopular position for them. I know it's not easy. But I just want to say, do what you believe is best in your own medical interest. If that's getting vaccinated, then fine. If it's not, then hold the line, and we have your back. God bless you, man. Thank you for being here. All right, we'll get to a couple more. We're doing a little overtime because Vermont is hard to get to. So, anyways.
Good afternoon. I'm from Rutland, Vermont, and both of my parents served in the military, and I'm not as brave as them, but I want to try to go for a public office. In Vermont, sadly. But my question for you is, I've always had a hard time finding a good argument from a Republican view for healthcare. What would your stance be on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, I think we have to understand we have sick care, not healthcare in our country. That the way we eat is total garbage.
and that a lot of the problems in our healthcare system are byproducts of poor nutrition and kind of this idea of being addicted to sugar and being addicted to things that are not really good for you at all whatsoever. And by the way, the food pyramid is all wrong, just in case you were wondering. The food pyramid is upside down. The overindulgence in carbohydrates has made America an obese nation and very unhealthy. And also all the fast food in every corner, which is not good either. So that's a huge part of it. I think competition, obviously we need in the healthcare system, but I think we can agree with the left on challenging the hospital oligarchy, that hospitals are ripping people off inside and out. And guess what? The left doesn't always agree with this. We need price transparency in our hospitals where people know exactly what things cost, so you don't get billed something 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later. Price transparency is critically important. I would also argue that we need to try to have more doctors have the ability to treat people and not kind of have this gatekeeper type deal. And so it's a very complicated issue. I could give a whole speech on healthcare if necessary. But I also think that we need to trust patients and practitioners to be able to have, you know, more choice and more ability. And I'll give you an example of this. Just in the last year, we have seen pharmacists lose their license and people get penalized and doctors for prescribing ivermectin hydroxychloroquine. This is happening all across the country. And so that's a very dangerous trend. And so I would just kind of say, I've given a lot of speeches on healthcare, what's right, what's wrong, what we can do. Single payer would be a disaster. Nationalization of healthcare is an awful and terrible idea. Instead, I think we need to go closer to something that crushes the kind of corporate dominant of Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, BioNTech, at the same time trying to preserve a holistic view of what is healthy, what is a healthy individual, which starts with nutrition, how we educate our kids about it, so on and so forth. So thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it. Sorry, we got to get to the next question. Sorry.
I just want to say thank you.
I'm sorry?
You just want to say thank you and God bless you and your new wife.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Next question.
Hey, Charlie. I want to just say, first off, I think we both have something in common, that we're both flatlanders. Well, I didn't grow up here in Vermont.
Oh, okay. I thought you were accusing me of being
a
flat earther.
Thing, you know, like,
that's not true.
No, not flat earth, flatland. I also want to say I love this country. I believe in free speech. I have a deep passion for being an American. I also disagree with a lot of what you say, but I do appreciate an opportunity for there to be dialogue. I think that's really, really important. I'm also going to get some flack for this from this crowd, but I grew up in Boston, often voted the most racist city in the country. I would tend to agree with that. And I'm pretty impressed with the knowledge you have, like the statistics and things that you can bring to your argument. So you've probably seen this study, but there was a study done by the Boston Globe in 2015 that outlined the average family wealth by race in the city of Boston. And that found that the average family wealth in Boston for an African-American family was $8. And it found that the average family wealth for a white family was $250,000. And I'm wondering how, to me, that's like a perfect example of a system that has been racist since the beginning of our country, leading up to the study in 2015, that shows that something has been leading us on this path that makes it much harder for people of color to achieve a middle class lifestyle. And I just want to know what your response to be would be to that.
So, yeah, that's a thoughtful question. And thank you. So blaming disparities simply and solely on racial discrimination is a mistake. And I will yield to the great Thomas Sowell on this. He wrote a whole book on it called Discrimination and Disparities. So disparate outcomes and blaming it solely on racial discrimination on these incredibly complex and numerous inputs and variables is something that is widely overgeneralistic. And so let's look at when the black middle class was growing the fastest in our country, right? So I'm going to give you my perspective.
In Boston or in the country?
Nationwide. So I can't speak specifically to Boston, but that certain studies have been done very similar in Chicago, where I'm from, and many others, which is...
I was born there. It's a great city.
It used to be a great city. Yes, you're right. And so... for example, in the 1950s is when the black middle class was growing the fastest. And then in the 1960s, we passed the Great Society Act, which intervened, started to subsidize single motherhood. Now, the single motherhood rate before the Great Society Act was 23, 24%, right? More or less.
after the Great Society Act, it is now upwards of 70 to 77% kind of based on what city you look at. Now, America, maybe you disagree with this, but I believe it's a fact, got considerably less racist since the 1960s. Do you agree with that? Maybe, maybe not?
That is just so hard to, like, land on. I can't. How do you measure that?
Like electing a black president?
I would say that that's, if we have maybe 30 black presidents, I would say we're on the right track.
Right, okay. How about, let me ask you, how about allowing...
How many white presidents versus black presidents have we had?
Right, well, also more white people were running for office than black individuals. But let me just finish, ask another question.
Because black individuals haven't always been allowed to run for office.
And that's not necessarily true. There was a moment where that was true, but starting in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a huge movement of black individuals running for elected office. I'll get to that in a second, though. But I think it's unquestionable that America is significantly less racist today than the 1960s. Major League Baseball was a white-only league. We had Jim Crow in the South. We had poll taxes, literacy tests. Those have been, you know, completely eliminated. In fact, it's now opposite what's happening. We're resegregating our schools. We have a supply and demand problem with racism in America, where we have such a low. One second, we have a supply. We have an undersupply of racism and an incredible demand to try to find it. So the question is, why all of a sudden then did the black middle class growth slow down to a grinding halt and single motherhood go from 26% in the 1960s to well over 70% today? And some people would say racism. Again, I just think it's incredibly objectively true. America has become significantly less racist since the 1960s, and just in every single metric possible and imaginable. But what has changed is that we spent trillions of dollars to subsidize bad behavior, keep fathers out of the home, have a broken education system that fosters illiteracy and unfortunately bad outcomes and outputs. And so that question altogether is one much more about whether or not the nuclear family was together and less about skin color, right? And so the question is, why did it go from 26% in single motherhood to 70%? I'm curious what your explanation would be for that.
I don't have an explanation for that. I'm still wondering how you can explain the wealth gap in Boston.
I just did, right, because most blacks are born without a father, and most whites are born with a mother and a father. That is the number one indicator and predictor of whether or not you will be able to build wealth and stay in a middle-class lifestyle. So it takes three things, according to the Brookings Institution, to stay out of poverty and break into the middle class. Graduate high school, get a job, any job, and get married before you have kids. Those are three things, regardless of skin color, regardless of where you come from. Unfortunately, we've made those three things very difficult in many communities, specifically urban communities. And the people that designed them, they might have meant well. I don't think they really did. But you could look at through the Great Society program, the creation of the Department of Education, the destruction of black homes and the integration of these vertical housing units. And so, you know, just some numbers here, like black boys are almost half as likely to end up incarcerated and twice as likely to go on to graduate from college for single parents if they're raised in a home with their two parents compared to boys just raised by one parent. So it's almost, the numbers are incredibly differential in that capacity, in that regard. And so I would just encourage you, we don't have time to get into this, just look into the studies done by Thomas Sowell, where he says, you look at disparate outcomes, don't blame discrimination. I'll give you a great example, which is, can we blame the fact that mountain towns and landlocked states are poorer than river towns and port towns? We can't blame racism on that. The fact is, your proximity to a port or the proximity to an ocean or to a river makes you a wealthier town. I use that as an example because you look at a town like Billings, Montana, they're much poorer than a town like Boston, Massachusetts. Not because of racism, it'd be just proximity to where commerce and trade happens. There are sometimes other explanations for disparate outcomes than just blaming it on discrimination.
I agree that there's more than one reason. I also want to say I don't identify as a Democrat or Republican.
I didn't call you. I didn't say that.
Totally. I just want to say that because I would say I would love to keep the dialogue going. I would love to like listen to your podcast and understand where you're coming from. If everybody here would listen to Seen on Radio's Seeing White that delves down into the real history of this country, then we can actually have a dialogue because I feel like I'm trying to do the research and understand where you are coming from. I don't know that everybody's trying to do the research and understand.
Can I ask you, check out his podcast. I mean that, and check out mine too. But yeah, so just about the history though. So you would say America was founded on systemic racism? How would you characterize it? I'm just curious.
I'm not going to go down that road because you'll destroy me because I'm not well read enough. I'm not well read enough. When I listen to you and I hear your take on it and I listen to the other folks, I'm more convinced by the other folks.
Okay.
I understand you're setting me up because you're you know more about
it. No, you brought up history, so I was just curious.
No, totally.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
I really appreciate the dialogue.
Thank you.
Open dialogue.
Thanks. Two more questions.
So you've talked a lot about religion tonight and the importance of religion in society and the family. And I understand the importance of spirituality and the importance of a structured existence. My question is, do you believe it's possible or do you believe it's impossible to live a good, moral, satisfied, and structured life without religion?
No. Now, let me tell you, though. Here's the kicker. I think you can live a good life without religion. The question is, how do you know it's good? You know it's good because a religious standard and tradition told you what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is evil. And that's not to say there aren't good atheists. You could go find plenty of people that are a-religious and have that. The question is, the standard bearer for entire society, where does that come from? And that is the ultimate question. And I would argue, though, that you will live a freer, happier life with religion, exceptions excluded. And every possible example I could look through, that there is a yearning in the human heart and the human soul for objective meaning and for transcendent order. And this is why I'm such a big critic of atheism, because it makes religious claims. It makes claims that there is no creator, there is no God, there is nothing, and I believe it in almost a religious type way. Agnostics, I think, are perfectly, you know, I could deal with agnostics, that's fine. By the way, without God, there would be no atheists, just so we're clear. I always have to get that one in. But I suppose the question is that we derive what is right and wrong, not through a microscope, but through traditions that we derive straight from the scriptures, the Decalogue, and things that we take for granted. And I'll say with this, because I know we're running out of time. There's this great document. It's actually not a great documentary. It's actually kind of boring, but it was about the barbarians that used to occupy Gaul. And it was a huge opponent of Rome. And there was this one line in it that was so telling. And they said, now, the people of Gaul were a unique people because they did not believe murder was wrong. And so they just, if you murdered somebody, it's like, yeah, whatever. It's just kind of part of it. Now, for us, it's like, what are you talking about? It's because you've been raised in a society that was built on a tradition and a morality that stemmed from scripture, stemmed from a Judeo-Christian construct. You could disagree with that, but it's objectively true that 55 of 66 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were Christian, that the founding documents were deeply prayed over and pored over by activist pastors across the country. So I think I answered the question because I know plenty of good people that are atheistic or secular or godless, but their definition of good would come directly back towards a Christian morality. So thank you. Appreciate it. All right, the last question.
So I'm a homeschool mom.
Thank you for homeschooling.
I'm also of German descent, which is so interesting because so many of us are coming out of the woodwork to fight critical race theory. And when they call you fascist, that is so ridiculous. They have no idea what they're talking about. And we do. And they're wrong. So back to my point. As a homeschool mom and as a German, I know eventually they come for you. If you don't stop them, they come for you. So we have to look, as much as we homeschoolers like to just go keep our children safe and run for the hills, we have to be involved in the larger picture. What do you think was the underlying intent of Jimmy Carter and that whole administration in creating the Department of Education? What do you think was the underlying intent, and what can we do to abolish it so that it returns to the local level?
Yeah. The realistic nature of abolishing the Department of Education is highly unlikely. The intent was to try to stop the bond between the parent and the child. This was done by every sort of totalitarian, tyrannical dictatorship of the 20th century. In Mao's Cultural Revolution, they incentivized and paid children to turn in their parents into the state. In the USSR, they did exactly the same. To the Ten Commandments, the only Ten Commandment with a promise is honor your mother and father so that you may live long in the land of which you are in. If you have strong relationships with your parents and strong families, your nation will survive. A nation goes and starts to demand tyranny if you do not have order and a strong family at home. People that are fatherless, people that do not have that structure, they're going to go to try to find that structure somewhere else. And so I don't know the intent of Jimmy Carter in particular, but you could see Melissa Harris Perry in 2014 who said, your children are not your own. It is that of the community. You see someone running for governor in Virginia come out and say, why do parents want to keep on having a say in their children's education? Make no mistake, it is the parents that are the most invested spiritually, emotionally, relationally, in the, what's best for their children. Do not give your kids over to the state. Do not act as if they have your best interests at heart. Instead, we need parents to do what you're doing, homeschooling and contesting for parental rights and parental choice in education. It makes society better, and it's better for your children. Thank you for being here tonight. So in closing, everybody, look around you. You're not alone here in Burlington, Vermont. And we were here to try to force the tough conversations because that's what keeps America a special nation, where you can see differences of opinion, where people can be heard. Our country's on fragile footing right now. And culturally, I do not want to be a country where people are afraid to speak out their viewpoints. Be the same person in public that you are in private. And to my nice friend from Boston who was born in Chicago, if you guys would be so inclined to take out your phone and subscribe to our podcast, The Charlie Kirk Show, it does bless us and it does help us a lot. You'll be able to re-listen to this entire podcast. And the heckling and the nonsense, I did my best to continue to go through it, but we need less of that and more listening to the other side, where we could be a country of decency, a country of truth, a country of prudence, of one of prosperity and peace for our generation. And for young people out there, it's our future. Reject radicalism, reject CRT, reject wokeism, be courageous, be strong. God bless you, Vermont, and thank you so much for having me. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.